What is up, good people? It is Friday, August 21st, just a day away from the Saints taking on the LA Rams in preseason game number two. Steve Geller in studio along with Charlie Long, along with the guys out on the West Coast, Deuce McAllister and Jeff Nowak, as we gear up, like I mentioned, a 3 o'clock kickoff tomorrow. You'll have right here on WWL Saints Radio pregame coverage with me and Charlie on First Take. We'll begin at 11 a.m. Gentlemen out west, how's it been going out there? I know I am envious of the temperatures. We've just been roasting as usual over here.
I mean, I'm doing good. We're hanging in, you know. We're in the conference room at the hotel, chatting with y'all. You know, football practices is what's there to be upset about.
Yeah, and I think for us, it hadn't just been all sunshine and roses. There's been a ton of sunshine now. We have had no roses. I'm waiting on some blooms. I've been getting a bunch of thorns, and so we have. What's interesting? Here, true story. We haven't had the humidity, but each day that they have practiced and gone against another team, the temperatures have been triple digits. It has been over 100 degrees.
Whoa.
So, yes, it hadn't been the 80, we're just chilling, you know, and you're just thinking it's
cool
Hawaii.
Cool breezes and, you know, sipping on Mai Tais.
Now, I will say this. You have had a breeze. There was a breeze. I mean, because that was the interesting thing about the Cowboys practice and the kickers.
Oh, because, I thought you were making a Drew Brees joke.
We did have a Drew Brees sighting as well. There was a Drew Brees sighting at the Cowboys practice. But, no, this was talking to the kickers and John Carney, who was at the practice as well, because he was helping the kickers. And I'm wailing left field. But just let me go. There was two separate fields. There was two separate fields. One that the Cowboys kicked on and the other one that the Saints kicked on. How about this? The wind was going in different directions, even though both were kicking. I'll just go, if I'm facing the field, kind of to my left. Both were kicking to the left if I'm facing both fields. And the wind was going in different directions, and the only way I know that is because I talked to the kickers and you know, just asked them, and they made the statement and the comment that from talking to Dallas and their staff is it takes you about a day and a half, maybe 2 days, to adjust to that, just because depending on which field you kick on, you have to kind of adjust to the kicking situation and how the wind blows. So I thought that was interesting. I mean, it reminds you of New York, where you get that swirl. It reminds you of kind of even San Francisco, the stadium, San Francisco, Levi.
Yeah.
But Candlestick. Candlestick was the one that myself as a returner, told him, nah, y'all got to put somebody else back there, because I don't want to catch that football, because it's doing some weird stuff as a returner. And so that was my first experience where you're literally, you could go 100 yards left or right and the wind would be blowing a different direction, just based off the feel of where you were kicking.
Looking at the work that the Saints got in out there, you know, 3 joint practices now in the books for the black and gold. Had the one here in Metairie against the Jacksonville Jaguars. We know the Tuesday session against the Dallas Cowboys got very spirited and costly for both ball clubs. And then yesterday's workout as well, or should I say, yeah, yesterday's workout. I'm trying to lose track of days here against the LA Rams. A little unusual, obviously, to have 3 joint workouts with teams. Overall, what were your impressions, Deuce? How do you think things went? And Jeff as well, obviously, all together had to be some good work, at least for the ones, because I don't even know if we're going to see Tyler Shuck in preseason games.
We're definitely not seeing him on Saturday. I think there's a chance you see him in week 3, and that's mainly because, you know, a lot of these starters who got out there for Thursday's practice, you know, they're getting 4-5 days in between real practices, because you're going to have an off day today, a game tomorrow, an off day Sunday, you know, and then you'll get back to practice on Monday. So you'll be able to treat it like basically a game week for those guys. And especially you're looking at Chris Olave, he won't have practice since last Tuesday because he didn't practice on Thursday. So I think one of the reasons they like this trip is because it's allowed them to give some guys some extended rest. Devon Vele got a rest day on Tuesday and then practiced yesterday. And I kind of am getting the impression that since the Jordan Tyson injury news, there has to be some lean toward, okay, let's just make sure we get our top two receivers to the regular season, because, you know, you're not going to change a ton relative to what you were going to do when you had Jordan Tyson, because you never had him on the field to do anything differently. But you will have to change things if somehow Chris Olave goes down, and that's going to rewrite everything for you. So I wouldn't be surprised if you start to wrap a guy like Chris in bubble wrap the rest of the way, but I do think there's value in getting Chuck, the first team offensive line, Travis Etienne, those guys on the field for at least a drive. Either way, I do think they got a lot of good workout here in California. It was a lighter practice yesterday. You know, just in general, it was short. I think there was only like 40 or some odd first team plays. So I think, you know, they were playing it safe a little bit in that one.
Yeah, I think it was under roughly about 47. Yeah. 47 offensive plays.
Compared to like 80 on Tuesday.
Correct. When you normally, I think they had, 90 against Jacksonville, yep. And then you had 80 against the Cowboys, and now you cut it into 47. And one of the reasons is because they had just went against Dallas 2 days ago, and so they agreed that, hey, we got a couple guys banged up. We want to get some work in. Let's just go half of what you normally would as far as plays are concerned. And even they were scheduled really both days to do 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And they did not do 2 minutes until
for
they
different
did it against
reasons.
Well, yeah, for different reasons, but they did do it against Jacksonville. But yeah, the Cowboys, it was because of the foolishness, and because the
very
Rams
expensive foolishness, as Justin Reed pointed out.
Very, very, very extensive. But against the Rams, it was because of the guys being banged up. And so I was under the impression even before, and this was just me, you know, kind of doing what they did with Chris Olave, and probably similar with A-Chain, you know, and it's just like, hey, I've seen enough.
Right.
You guys are critical to what we're trying to do offensively, and the other guys, probably Juwan as well, you know, taking nothing away from any other players, but those three have to be available, and they have to be 100% when you take on the Detroit Lions. And so, obviously, you want Tyler Shuck to be 100%. He still needs to get reps. We're not saying that he doesn't need any reps, but when we talk about specific to games, that's the one guy and those three players that you have to have healthy. When you talk skill, I mean, because here's one, and we don't know how he feels. We hope that he's okay. You lost Caesar to an ankle injury in that practice against the Rams. Now, he didn't leave the field as far as going in and inside the training room, anything like that. He stayed on the sideline, but, you know, it was still something that you have to monitor. And so, you know, I don't know which ankle it was, but I did see him. Yeah, it was left ankle. Yeah. I did see him go down and kind of got rolled up on by his own teammate. It was Eric.
And, you know, it was interesting because he had a reaction on the field that would make you think he knew exactly what happened when it happened. And it's easy to, like, he had ankle injuries all last year. I think he sprained both ankles last year at different points of the season, and you could see him just pounding the ground. But he was moving pretty well at the end of practice, so I think that's encouraging. At least.
Yeah, I think it's encouraging, and I think, you know, it also shows that, all right, we got to get these guys through this training camp. Now, you still have to get work. It's not like, hey, we're telling them that you have to put them in bubble wrap and they don't practice, because you did get one guy back, Godchild, you know, was able to come back yesterday and practice against the Rams. But, you know, for me overall, I've never experienced, and I'm talking personally, I've never experienced having basically 2.5 games. I won't call it a 47 reps. Well, I mean, if I'm getting 90 and 80 plays, that's 2.5 games. I've never experienced 3 games in almost a week span.
Yeah.
Correct? Was that roughly a week as far as,
I mean,
when did
– Thursday to Thursday, you had a joint practice, a preseason game, and then 2 joint practices, and you're going to have another preseason game tomorrow. So, yeah.
So, I mean, you've experienced, even if you didn't take every rep, you've experienced possibly 3 games total as far as plays are concerned. And I was taking – I take that from a guy that was speaking along those lines, Chase Young. Mm-hmm. Because he was proud of himself. He was proud of himself when he was taking the pads off on the field, and he just commented on, I just went through three games and played. I mean, because it wasn't a vet days off. He didn't have a vet day off. Not that he was looking for one, but that was not the situation or the case for him. And just for all the other guys that went out there and performed and practiced, you know, you kind of tilt your hat to them because it was not easy doing what they just did.
We're here on Sports Talk. You can sound off on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. It's 504-260-1870. Taking a break here. We're going to come back with even more as we delve into more of this matchup. Saints and Rams in preseason action tomorrow. What are some of those key matchups we're looking at? The roster spots up for grab. All that on the table for you folks. Coming back with more Sports Talk right after this. Keep it locked on WWL Saints Radio. Tomorrow, the Saints are taking on the Rams in preseason game number 2 in SoFi Stadium. WWL's game day starts 11 a.m. Me and Charlie Long for First Take to Houdat Nation's time to check in from your tailgate party. Then at 1 o'clock, the countdown to kickoff with Bobby Hebert. Game time 3 p.m. Turn down those TVs and turn up Deuce and Hoss on the call with Jeff Nowak on the sideline. Then after the game, join the Cajun Cannon for the point after till 9 p.m. Saints-Rams, 10 hours of wall-to-wall Saints coverage tomorrow on WWL Saints Radio, and of course, always on the free Odyssey app. We're talking about the joint workout yesterday between the Saints and the Rams gearing up for this preseason matchup tomorrow. We got Deuce and Jeff Nowak out in California joining us here today on the show, breaking down things. And, you know, it's easy to look at the stats from these old practices. They're always the sexy thing to talk about, whether it's, you know, the big catches, the touchdowns, or even, you know, getting sacks on the quarterback. But I'm curious from you guys to know how the battle in the trenches went along the offensive defensive lines for the Saints against the Rams and also the Cowboys. I wonder how you felt about that.
Well, so I can talk about the defense against the Cowboys, and I can talk about the offense against the Rams. Those are the sides that I looked at. And, you know, a defensive line against the Cowboys was kind of interesting because they had some chunk runs. You know, and I think one of the reasons you had fights on both sides of the ball, it was very, very reminiscent on both fields, is felt like the offenses early on were having a lot of success. And then the defenses decided, no, this isn't going to fly. We're going to ramp up the physicality. And the offenses took exception to that, and you had fights. But I did feel like the Saints defense in the trenches specifically really kind of clamped down. You didn't see a ton outside of a few chunk runs. I think the first one was from Javonte Williams. And I thought beyond that point, you saw them have a lot of success. Christian Boyd, I thought, had a good day. Devon Gaucho didn't practice on Tuesday. He did on Thursday. But then I also feel like what you saw in terms of the pass rush was the Cowboys, which is not the case for every defense in these situations or offense in these situations, but they went into the day with a plan. We're going to take Chase Young away. We're going to send tight end, running back, someone over to help, and we're going to see if Carl Granderson can beat us or whoever is on the other side can beat us. And what I thought I came away encouraged with is Carl Granderson won that matchup pretty consistently. He was getting pressure on Dak Prescott throughout the practice, and that's what you have to see, because when you're as talented as Chase Young is and you go into a matchup as the featured guy, you're going to get circled by the other team's offensive line. You're going to be a focal point of that protection plan. The guy on the other side has to win and force them to say, hey, we might not be able to leave this guy one-on-one. So that's what I was pleased about with the Saints defensive line.
Yeah, and just to follow up, Jeff, on one of those comments, there was a big play that Dallas hit down the field, but after seeing a different angle of that throw that Dak made, it probably would have been a sack.
Yeah.
That probably would have been
That's always the tough thing in these practices, right?
Yeah, I mean, because a lot of times those guys, they start to pull up or they run right by them, you know, and so when you look at it, one of those throws that Dak made, which ended up being a big play down the field, it was probably going to be a sack, or I don't know if Dak would have been able to sit in the pocket and make the throw, or if he would have gotten everything on the football kind of like he did.
I can tell you the Saints defensive line would think it was a sack.
Well, 100%. 100%. The Saints defensive line would have said, I would have got there.
Yeah.
And so you know that's how they're going to feel about it. Now, on the flip side for me, I kind of tried to cheat the drill and split and watch both sides of it. So your head is always on a swivel. And most of the time, you're going to miss something. When you do that,
especially when there's a fight breaking out.
A fight every other play, and so now I'm looking at the fight, and then the other side is running a play, and then you kind of miss some stuff right there because you're watching the fight and making sure it doesn't escalate over there by you. But just going back for me to the Dallas, Dallas, just practice in general. I agree with Jeff. The first period, the Saints offensive line won that battle. The Saints offense, period, won that battle. When, in the first set of plays, whether that was 10 or 12, the second two, it probably took the Saints at least two periods to say, all right, we're going to pick this up. Now, in between, there were some scuffles and fights, but I thought Dallas got more physical those second two periods. Now, the Saints, I counted every back, even Alvin when he was in there before he got hurt, every back had at least a plus 10 run, and it probably would have been more than that. You know, and that's just, you know, you getting through the front line, no safety touching you, and you one-on-one with either a corner and or safety. That's a plus 10 run for me. And at some point, you're going to have to win one of those matchups. And so whether you were talking – the only guy that didn't have that was C.J. Donaldson. And the only reason he didn't have it, he didn't get the reps that the other backs got. And so that was our first time seeing Kendre. That was also your first time seeing Devin Neal back out there. And, you know, obviously Alvin, and then also for the Saints, it was Travis as well as Todd Chandler. Yeah. I mean, and so all of those guys popped a run for me over those next two periods. But if I was being honest, the second and the third, they were almost like play for play, where the offense would do some good, Dallas defense would do something good. Offensive line held up. They did hold up. They gave you some running lanes, but as we all know, there were probably some situations where I know too, Tyler probably threw the ball in the ground, or he would have gotten sacked. You know, if I, overall out of how many plays? 80 plays offensively. If he was in for 50 to 40, there probably would have been at least 6 sacks by Dallas.
You know, it's interesting because it's something that's happened in this camp that I didn't expect is, to this point, I feel like the Saints' offensive line has been better run blocking than pass blocking.
No, I agree.
It's not what
you.
I expected to see. And I mean, David Edwards is obviously an upgrade at the left guard spot. But just generally, all of these practices, I felt like the Saints have run the ball very well.
Well, you talk about joint practice,
yes,
or practices in general.
It's tough to gauge the real practice, you know, practices at home where it's the offense going against the defense, because just the physicality doesn't reach the level that it reaches in these joint practices.
So in the joint practices, I would agree with you. I mean, because going now I jumped to Thursday, there was a run that Ty Chandler had on the outside zone.
House call.
I mean, it would have been 40 yards. It would have been 40 yards, 50 yards. And I told Fuaga and I told Caesar, man, you can't draw this play up. And if you do draw it up, they ought to put it up on the board for the team to see it. I mean, because it was perfect. Those two were the focal. But then you talk about the receivers, the tight ends, and even the cutoff blocks on the backside. Everybody had a job to do, and they did their job. And so I don't know who the receivers were in on that play, but everybody did their job on that. And then you go back and you look at it, it's like, all right, man, you know, Kendre. Oh, man, look at Devin. You look at some of those runs, they had consistently good runs. And so, look, I would be foolish to say no, the Rams didn't have tackle for losses, or they didn't have, you know, no gainers, because they did. Everything wasn't perfect. But if you're the Saints, every run is not going to be 4 or 5 yards a clip. It's just not going to happen, and particularly when you're rotating different guys in. But I think that they are pleased with some of the progress that they have had when you talk about the run game in general. Now, you go to the passing game. Tyler didn't have an interception. He didn't have a turnover. You know, the one thing that I would probably, and I always fuss about it, is I would like to see them go vertical a little bit more. There were probably 3 throws down the field that I wanted them to take. I wanted to see if Bud Means could catch, you know, the deep ball. They didn't throw it. They threw it to him once. They didn't connect on it. There were 2 other times, and there was one that they did connect on to Trey Palmer on the left sideline. Excuse me. There was another
Zach Wilson on the throw for that one.
There was Zach Wilson on the throw. There was another one that I wanted them to test Barry and Brown down the middle. Now, for the most part, the underneath throw was there. I get that. I don't argue with 7 yards. But I need to know if those guys can catch those one-on-one situations. I need to know if we can make those one-on-one situations where you are hitting the explosive plays, because that's the one thing that this offense lacked. when you think about it last year, that is the one thing that they lacked. Yeah. And so now you've got guys, not to say that they couldn't run last year, but you've got guys that can run. And on all those throws, it's not pressure. There were situations where there was pressure and we took a sack. You know, the pressure off the right side, the receiver has to speed up his route a little bit, or the quarterback, he can't wait for one guy to get it open. I got to look to my outlet immediately to the left and get rid of the football. But, I mean, just little things like that where my offensive line, they've picked it up. If I am going to blitz you, you can't just tell me, oh, I'm fine with picking up 3 yards. I got to make you pay. Right. And that's the one thing I think when you talk about growth for a team, and whether it's the offensive line or quarterback or backs or receivers in general, it's being able to hit those explosive plays and not just a guy breaking a tackle or that something
right,
like that.
It's going to be catch and run, but it can't got, all be catch and run.
That part.
Right.
It, you know, I'm fine with yak yardage, but I've got to be able to say, all right, we hit a 30-yarder and my receiver only had to run 5 yards for the touchdown because it was a perfect throw and it was on the money.
What I was encouraged by yesterday, and honestly over the last week, you know, it wasn't until the Jacksonville practice that Bryce Lance caught his first pass from Tyler Shuck in training camp. He hadn't really been getting first team reps, but, you know, over the last week, you've seen that a lot. He was targeted 6 times by Tyler on Thursday. He caught 5 of them, 2 of them for touchdowns. Another one was a 20-yard gain over the middle of the field. And I think, to me, one of the things that's making the downfield passing a little hard to get to is the guys you need to throw to downfield are rookies, right? Unless you're throwing to Chris Olave, which you're targeting him a lot. But, you know, who are those other guys that are stretching the field? It's Berrion Brown. It's Bryce Lance, guys you haven't had a lot of time on task with. How much are you going to trust them? And that's why, you know, I see Bryce Lance get 6 targets. To me, that indicates Tyler and Bryce are kind of getting on the same page a little bit, and that's going to help a lot.
But when I look at it, because here's the situation, just because of with Jordan Tyson not being available, I've got to know what I have in 16.
Means.
I've got to know what I have in Bud Means. I've got to know what I have in Trey Palmer, because I may be depending on one of those guys to be a guy that can stretch the field. Yes, I'm depending on the rookies, but they're still rookies. They're still rookies. So I've got to know if I have something in Bud Means and Trey Palmer. You know, not to say that they weren't going to make the team, but they have an opportunity, a true opportunity to make this squad now. And,
oh, yeah, for sure.
And I don't know if it's both or either or. So that's why I want to see what they can do with some down-the-field throws. Because if I told you right now, and I ask you this. Who are your top gunners for this team right now?
That's a good question.
Who are your top gunners for this team right now? Because I know one already.
Ike.
So you're going with Ike as one?
I feel like Ike has to be one. And if he's not, then I wonder if Ike has a spot on the roster. I kind of feel like he has to be. I don't know. I feel like Jaden Price.
I was going to put Price in there.
Yeah.
So give me. We've got two gunners.
Yeah.
You've got one being Ike.
Has to be, yeah.
And your other one is Price
kind of,
or
kind of an
Bud
open
Means.
Competition. I feel like Bud Means has to be in the mix there. If Ty Chandler made the roster, I'd consider him. But I think he's on the fringe there. I think he's going to have a tough time cracking that 4-man, you know, running back room. 22. So Martin Emerson Jr. That's your vote, Haas.
Haas, who is your other? That's just one. I need two. It's two of them out there. And Steve, you've got to give me your two.
And Ike Adams. So you think the backup cornerbacks are the gunners?
Are your two gunners. And Steve, who are your top two gunners? Not one. I want your top two gunners.
I'm definitely looking at Price, and I think Yadam as well, too, just because you're trying to keep both of those guys around.
And I wouldn't say both of you are wrong. I wouldn't say all three of you are wrong.
But you're wrong.
But one of your gunners is rookie. He's a 4-3 guy. I can't even.
Bryce Lance?
No, not that one. Styles. Lorenzo Styles. Lorenzo Styles is one of your gunners. And your other gunner, if it's not Ike, it's probably going to be Bud Means.
Yeah.
But that's only if Bud gives me something and he can make a tackle or play.
I'm a little, you know, I'm a very superstitious guy, and I'm a little worried for him tomorrow. The last two times he's walked into that building, he's left with a season-ending ankle injury. Like, I don't know if he's aware of that, but I'm, like, stressed out for him.
Well, if he isn't aware, I don't want him to listen.
Right,
to be listening to us right now.
I'm not bringing it up to him.
Yeah, I don't want he to be listening right now to us talk about it. But when you look at it, I don't think it's Emerson in that mix. And Ty Chandler, he's on that squad, but he's up back.
Okay.
He's
personal
up at, yeah, he's a personal protector, yeah. And he can play the wing for him. But the two guys on the outside, if I am going to make that team, I feel good about Styles being one of those guys, because not to say you're going to cut him, that's what he has to do.
Yeah.
And the other one, it's like, all right, you got three guys, whether it's Emerson, whether it's Ike, you know, Yedem or Bud Means, what can you do?
So you don't have Price in that mix at all.
No. But I have him making the team.
Okay.
No. I have him making them team, but
he'll play special teams.
Yeah, he'll play special teams, but not in that role.
Yeah.
Going to take a break here on WWO Sports Talk. You can line up your questions, comments, anything you want to ask Deuce and Jeff out in California about the Black and Gold, 504-260-1870. Taking that break, coming back with more Sports Talk right here on WWL. Boy, life moves fast, and so does WWL. Whether you're commuting, working, traveling, or relaxing at home, we are right there with you. Tune in for the local coverage, weather, and breaking stories that matter for WWL on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, or tune in wherever you are. WWL is there. And we've got WWL out in California, Jeff Nowak and Deuce McAllister hanging out as we've been breaking down this Saints roster going into preseason game number 2. That's a 3 o'clock kickoff tomorrow right here on WWL. Saints Radio. Got into a little bit of the O-line there, and you know, I just wanted to bring up that again for the fact that, you know, we haven't really, I feel like, talked about David Edwards, the free agent addition at left guard, too much, and maybe that's a good thing of being an offensive lineman, but have you noticed a big difference with him in the mix there, especially in these joint workouts that we just went through out west?
I mean, it's tough to say, like, this is the impact of having a David Edwards. You know, we did talk about how they've been better against the run. I've seen a lot of runs go to the left side, and I think that's going to be your strong run side for this group with David Edwards and Kelvin Banks over there. But one of the things that I think he's impacted this group even more than what you see on the field, if you talk to Jeremiah Wright, who got a lot of snaps at right guard after Cesar Ruiz went down yesterday,
right?
He says, like, he's better as a pass blocker now just from watching David Edwards and, you know, talking to him in between reps and in between practices and learning techniques. During the preseason game against the Jags, the second string offensive line, they really struggled, you know, after the estimate touchdown, but then they had like two or three drives in a row where there was just pressure. And after each drive, the offensive linemen who were on the field, which is second and third teamers, he was like going up to each one, like getting down in a stance, like saying, hey, this is what you're doing wrong, this is how they're trying to beat you. And if you didn't know any better, you would think he was an assistant coach on the sideline, you know, almost like Will Clapp last year. And I think that's just when you bring in a guy like that, you not only bring in the player, but you bring in the presence, you bring in the mind, you bring in the understanding. And I think that makes everyone around him better. And I think if you ask the Saints why they were so invested in bringing him in, that's a big part of it.
Yeah, I think also when you look at it, his impact, obviously you want it on the field, but his impact in that O-line room is what you really, really probably didn't think or know that he would have. It is still McCoy's room. That's McCoy's room. That's McCoy's offensive line. But to have a voice from the outside, like David, that comes in and he's not taking over it, but he's just giving stuff that he's kind of been there, done that almost in a sense, and being able to help those guys. And with him just being a little different from Eric, I think it helps out those guys tremendously. And so he's going to have a really, really big impact. You know, I'm knocking on wood myself for that unit, just not only from his play on the field, but just like Jeff just talked about, his experience. What's the offensive lineman? Played for the Rams, played at LSU. Hall of Fame.
Whitworth? No.
Yeah.
Faneca?
No.
Whitworth. Andrew Whitworth? He's not a Hall of Famer, but yeah.
Well, not a Hall of Famer, but was there yesterday for the Rams.
Yeah.
Me and he were sitting there talking, and he didn't realize that David was with us. And just to hear him talk about Big Dave, that's what he called him. Man, that's Big Dave. Man, he was like, man, you're going to love him. You know, he's a really, really good guy, really technical, really smart. And then when you look at him, now I know Andrew has lost some weight and, you know, he's not in playing shape. But when you look at him, it's like, man, that Dave's just as big as you. And you played left tackle. You know what I'm saying? And so that's the other thing. He's a guard, but he looks like a tackle. He looks like a tackle, and so to be able to help, and I still call him a rook, be able to help your young rook Banks out there and take some of the pressure off of Eric where he can worry about the calls and he can worry about just, you know, making sure that the line has the right thing, what they know what to do. And now that takes stress off for Tyler because he knows it's picked up. And if it's not picked up, it's because Tyler didn't check to something. You know, because the offensive line is going to give you in the right protection based off of what you see. Now, Tyler, the growth comes from him once he sees the rotation, once he sees what that secondary guy is doing. That's the growth that you want from Tyler for him to be able to do it. But those initial five and possibly six, the offensive line will be able to handle, and the back is the one that says, all right, I go 1-2. And the other thing that Dave has done a really, really good job, because I saw it in the game as well as in practice, even when he sees it, you get the initial call from Eric. If he sees it, he's yelling something out, and now Eric yells it out as well. And that's just – I've played in the NFL. I hadn't been in this system, but I've played long enough.
I think the other thing with Dave, and I know we want to go to break here, he's also kind of a self-made player. Like he's earned everything. He was a fifth-round pick. He wasn't one of these guys that came in as a first-round pick, got handed a job, developed at the NFL level. Like he had to earn his job. He had to develop. He was a teammate of Ryan Ramczyk's in college. But like I think that helps him kind of get on the level of like a Jeremiah Wright, who's a fourth-round pick, who had to develop to earn a job. I think that's just a helpful perspective to have in that room from one of your star offensive linemen, not just a depth piece, like a guy you expect to impact that group mightily.
Heading to break here on WWL. Want to give a shout out to Magazine Pizza for feeding our game day crew. Magazine Pizza, 1068 Magazine Street, a casual American New York style pizzeria. Dine in, get it delivered. If some of the best gourmet pizza in town, folks, Magazine Pizza. They also have pasta, sandwiches, wings, and salads. Just go to magazinepizza.com. Break and be back with more sports talk right after this. Saints taking on the Rams tomorrow in Los Angeles. Game day begins 11 a.m. with First Take. Then it's the countdown, the kickoff with Bobby Hebert, 1 o'clock. Game time with Deuce and Haas and Jeff on the sideline, 3 p.m. After that, the point after with the Cajun Cannon until 9 p.m. Saints Rams. Catch all the excitement tomorrow on WWL and the Odyssey app. Got some guests lined up on today's show as well, folks. Next hour, we'll hear from broadcaster Stan Verretti, does NewOrleansSaints.com hosting, along with the Stan and Neil show. Plus, in the 6 o'clock hour, former Saints Super Bowl champ Roman Harper, also SEC network analyst, will be joining us. Keep it locked right here on WWL, folks, for all the latest and greatest on the black and gold. You can chime in on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. That's 504-260-1870. Now it's time for Top of the Hour News. Back with more sports talk right after this. Yes, indeed. Back here on Sports Talk, hour number two, as we're gearing up for Saints preseason game number two. That's a 3 o'clock kickoff tomorrow right here on WWL Saints Radio. Myself and Charlie Long will be bringing you First Take starting at 11 a.m. and then getting the countdown to kickoff with the Cajun Cannon joining us at 1 p.m. Deuce and Haas with Jeff Nowak on the call, 3 o'clock, and then afterwards, the point after, till 9 p.m., where you can sound off on your thoughts of this matchup that we're going to see the Rams and Saints taking the field in SoFi Stadium. 10 hours of wall-to-wall coverage here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. We know tomorrow, we won't be seeing Tyler Shuck at quarterback, but the question is, guys, who's going to be the first one out the gate for the black and gold? Will Spencer get another start, or has Zach Wilson kind of earned the right to get start number one here in game number two for the Saints? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, we do know that you will not get Tyler Shuck tomorrow.
I can say that with without a doubt
that Tyler won't go tomorrow. And I don't know, even with Zach and or Spencer, if it's whoever starts, that doesn't mean that they're guaranteed the number two spot at this juncture.
Right.
I still think it'll be an evaluation for them. I would not be surprised if Zach does start. But just because if he does, I don't think that means, oh, yeah, he's for sure overtaken.
It means it's a competition.
Yeah, I just think that you have a true competition. And if he doesn't start, I think that they still feel good about him, and they want those guys to continue to compete. I could see this thing going into even next week where it's like, hey, we like both of these guys, but we do know we have to make a decision, and they will make that decision at some point. But I'll say this. It's a lot more interesting than it was a month ago. I'll put it that way. When you talk about the backup quarterback position.
And, you know, Kellen Moore yesterday was asked, hey, can you announce who the starter is going to be? And he said no. He said they're going to have those conversations Thursday, Friday. They probably know by now. They haven't announced it. But what that tells you, even if it is Spencer starting again, what that answer tells you is it's a conversation, which prior to the week one of the preseason, I don't think it was. I mean, Kellen didn't slow play anything. He said Spencer's the starter. So even just the indecision tells you that situation has grown a lot closer to what is a legitimate QB2 battle, not unlike what we saw a couple years ago where Spencer Rattler and Jake Haener were competing for the backup job behind Derek Carr. You know, that was something that lasted all throughout the preseason. It was a major question. You know, they flipped starts. You know, even during the season, it was like, okay, wait, Jake Haener's the backup, but Derek goes down and suddenly Spencer's the starter. You know, it's interesting. But what I'll say for Zach, one way or the other, whether he's the starter or he's the backup, I think there's pressure on him to go out there and back up that performance, show that it wasn't just, hey, this is a one-time thing. You can go out week in, week out, you know, lead the offense, deliver big plays, connect with the receivers. Because it's not going to be one guy plays with the starters, one guy plays with the backups. It's going to be you're both out there with roughly the same supporting cast. Who looks better?
When you look at Zach, I mean, he's still a young guy, too, even though he's been in the league since, what was it, 2021, the second overall pick by the New York Jets. We know he's bounced around a little bit to the Broncos, the Dolphins, and now with the Saints. So interested to see if he can capitalize on his opportunities here because we've seen a little bit still from Spencer Rattler, but I still feel like he's a guy obviously growing into that role as well.
No, I think he's growing into it. I mean, but Spencer, you know, I think you would be naive to say neither one of those guys wanted to be a starter. I think all three of them want to be a starter in this league, but you have to look at the opportunity and what you have in front of you. So if I don't have an opportunity to be the immediate starter, I want to be the next guy that's in line that, hey, if something happens, I'm the guy that's going out there to be able to get my team points on the board or to manage a game, et cetera, whatever needs to be done. Because I think both, all three of them really, truly, at some point, they want to be the long-term starter somewhere. And so if you're not preparing yourself like that, then you're doing it all wrong. And, you know, that's just where I feel that they are. I think all three of them feel like that, hey, and if you're being honest, all three have been a starter in the NFL. All three have been starting quarterbacks in the NFL. And I don't know if that's a bad thing. What you're looking for, if you're the Saints, you're looking for consistency.
Yeah,
that's what you're looking for. You want those guys, when they're on the field, to not be the reason that you're not winning games. You want them to be the reason that you're winning games.
Yeah, and to your point, Steve, you know, they are all about the same age, right? Zach's been in the league for longer, but, you know, he's 27. Tyler's 26, going to be 27 during the season. Spencer's 25, going to be 26 during the season. Tyler Shuck and Zach Wilson were in the same recruiting class coming out of high school. That's kind of wild to think about considering, you know, the amount of time Zach's been in the league. But, you know, he's not just this old dude who's just hanging around. Like, he's a player that you could still see develop. It's a weird situation, though, because if Zach Wilson gets another starting job, it will not be for the New Orleans Saints. So you're you know, if he does have a – if it is a situation where Zach is playing head and shoulders above Spencer, it's probably not a multi-year situation. It's probably a one-year situation. But I do think that Zach feels very comfortable in his current situation. I think he likes where he's landed. I think he appreciates the setup the Saints have. And, you know, maybe there is a situation where they can get the best out of him that some other teams haven't been able to.
Was aggressive Spencer Rattler back at the practices out west, guys? Because I feel like we saw a lot of that in the Metairie training camp session. Then we got to game day against Jacksonville, and he didn't push the ball down the field like we had been seeing previously.
No, I think so. I mean, here's the one thing that you want to do. You can be aggressive, but you also want to manage the game. You want to be able to manage the game and take your shots when they're there. Trust my guys that they're going to make the plays for you. But here's where you have to understand and realize what's going on. I can throw and be aggressive two long passes, and if they are not complete, guess what we're faced with? Mm-hmm. Third and 10.
Right.
And guess what? If we don't convert, we're coming off the field. And so a lot of times you want, as a quarterback, to get in some rhythm. Well, getting in rhythm is normally short, quick passes underneath and letting my guy maybe break a tackle or two. And it's just understanding when to push the ball down the field and when to say, hey, I got a one-on-one. I want to trust my receiver in some of those situations. And you can truly do that. But the other part of it is, as well, up front, am I having the time to be able to get throws off down the field? And I don't think that he ever got comfortable, and that being Spencer, I don't think that he ever got comfortable to where he was comfortable enough to throw it downfield. He wanted to take some checks, stay out on the field, you know, let those drives kind of progress, and then maybe take some shots, and it never just really happened.
You can't go on the field like looking for a one-play drive or a two-play drive. Like, the longer you can extend drives, the more opportunities you have to catch a defense in a situation where you can hit them with a big play. And I think that's been the biggest difference for Spencer, is you haven't seen him be able to extend drives, right? It's been a lot of three and outs when he's been struggling. And I think that's the biggest thing I want to see for him tomorrow, whether he's the starter or not. I want to see those drives extend so you can get a first down or two. Then you're in that midfield range where you can get aggressive. And I just haven't seen – he just didn't get into those situations against the Jags. So to me, that's the big part of it. Can you get those drive starters so that you can hit them with the drive finishers on top of it?
Looking forward to seeing more of this QB action tomorrow for sure for the Saints. We're going to take a break when we get back. Broadcaster Stan Verrett, I know he was out there at Saints camp with you guys. We'll be checking in with him on WWL Saints Radio. Keep it locked right here. We're going to come back with even more right after this. Welcome back into Sports Talk here on WWL Saints Radio, gearing up for preseason action tomorrow, 3 p.m. kickoff against the L.A. Rams. Helping us talk all things black and gold, Stan Verrett, NewOrleansSaints.com host, along with the Stan and Neil Show joining us here. Stan, always appreciate the time, man. How you been doing?
Doing great. It was great to see the team out here in California. Got to see both practices, and I'm looking forward to the game tomorrow.
Stan, the guys out there out west with you, Deuce McAllister and Jeff Nowak, our sideline reporter, got to take in the practice as well. But curious, before I hand things over to them, what kind of stood out from you from this black and gold bunch in that joint workout against the Rams?
Well, there was a fight night in Oxnard with the Cowboys. Unfortunate to see that, and they had to deal with the fine and everything from that. You know, there's a couple of ways to look at that one, where it's like, you know, you don't want to see the guys back down, but you also want to see them keep their heads. You know, I think the Cowboys are, you know, a little edgy. It was good to see that they didn't back down, but you want to keep it under control, you know, and get the work in that you need to get in practice, and not let the other stuff distract you. Against the Rams, I was just watching Teron Armstead with Nick Underhill, and he was talking about how well the offensive line did against a pretty good defensive front from the Rams, although Myles Garrett didn't practice and Aaron Donald's not suited up yet. But that's a good sign. The one thing that concerns me are the injuries that are starting to pile up a little bit. You got Quincy Riley and now Kamara on the shelf for a little while, with Jordan Tyson, John Ridgeway left in a boot. And, you know, we had the Brian Brisee injury earlier. So, you know, that this has been a real active stretch. If you go back to the practice against Jacksonville, the game against Jacksonville, and then the practice against the Cowboys, practice against the Rams, and now a game against the Rams tomorrow. That's a lot of activity in a very condensed period of time. So I'm hoping that they can come out of this game without any other serious injuries to key players, because, you know, it's getting to the point where it's a bit concerning now.
Stan, I want to ask you just your overall opinion after watching this team, you know, up close in those practices, and what are some of the things that you think that they still have to kind of improve on, do a little bit better? We know the injuries are a question and concern, but just some areas that you say, hey, they've got to get a little bit better at A and B.
You know, sometimes it's hard to tell when you don't have the personnel groupings that you're going to see during the regular season. That's always the caveat. Like, you know, there are guys in who may play, who may not play. There are guys in who are in due to injuries. So it's hard to tell from a full team perspective. So I try to look at individual players and kind of see things that I think that they need to do, and players who have opportunities that they can capitalize on. As a unit, I mean, I really like the offensive line. They have some really talented players, pretty much first and second rounders, who are really good as a unit. I think the addition of David Edwards is really going to help there. This quarterback battle between Zach Wilson and Spencer Rattler is going to be going to be really important for both of those guys tomorrow, because, you know, from what I've heard on a day-to-day basis, Spencer Rattler was really letting it rip in practice and then looked a little tentative in the first preseason game. So those two guys, you know, are going to have to sort it out. Who's going to step up and claim that backup position? Zach Wilson had a pretty good performance last week against the Jaguars. So that's something I'll be watching very closely. With Jordan Tyson out, there's going to be some additional playing time for a receiver who may not have been on the active roster if Tyson were healthy. So who steps up and claims that? I like what I've seen from Trey Palmer. Chris Olave's been fantastic. I mean, we know that's a known commodity there. But, you know, Trey Palmer, Devon Vele, Barrion Brown, you know, these guys, I want to see who's going to step up and really develop the kind of chemistry that we see with Olave, with Tyler Shook. Who else can develop a feel for what they need to be in this offense? I'd like to see more from Oscar Delp at tight end in terms of production. He did have the touchdown last week, but I'd like to see him more involved. And then in the running backs, I mean, Ty Chandler has shown a burst that realistically in a running back, I'm trying to think the last time the Saints had his kind of speed in the backfield, because when he gets a crease, I mean, he can go. And we saw it on the kick return last week, and we saw it in some of these practices where he was able to get outside and really pick up some yardage. So he's another player who I'll be watching. And then on defense, you know, with Heldman and Price, they both had eye-popping performances last week. But was it a one-week thing, or are they guys who are going to claim spots on the active roster through their production? So those are some of the guys who I really want to watch and see how they perform against a team that is the favorite to win the Super Bowl, that has everything in place. You know, how do they go out there and compete?
You know, Stan, this is Jeff, by the way. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us. I have the answer to your trivia question. C.J. Spiller, I think, would be the last running back the Saints had that was, like, elite, like, game-breaking type speed. Velus Jones last year was kind of that, but he never really played. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think the way I put it, I was on with Dave Cohen earlier today, and the way I put it was, like, there's going to be opportunities in the next 2 weeks where some guy breaks off, like, a 25, 30-yard run, and you're like, who's that guy? It's going to be Ty Chandler. Like, that's the answer to that question, because he's going to show up. Just like last week on the kick return, he's going to show up, and people are going to be like, whoa, like, that's a different type of speed for the running back position. My question for you, you know, year two, Kellen Moore, I'm curious, what was your review of Kellen as a first-year head coach? And, you know, what are your expectations for kind of this coaching regime, you know, in year two with a lot of the same coaches, same offensive coordinator, same defensive coordinator? I feel like, you know, 6-10, year one is, you know, within the margin of error for what you could be satisfied with for a team that's coming off of four, now five missed playoff appearances. But what are your expectations for Kellen and the coaching staff in year two?
What I'd like to see is them continue to develop young players into contributors who will be on the roster for the foreseeable future. You know, figure out who those guys are and continue to develop them. And then, you know, I think last year at 6-10, you're right. Okay, first year coach, you went to a rookie quarterback midseason. Fine. I like the way they ended the season. You know, there's a lot of talk about, well, hey, maybe they should just try to position themselves for a better draft pick. But I think winning matters more than that. And I think some of the young guys to experience winning late in the season last year gave them some momentum going into this year. I think you want to see a team that you feel like is on the upswing again. You know, now, the good fortune for the Saints is that the NFC South has looked like a very winnable division the last few years. I mean, it's there for the taking. So if they can get the kinds of contributions that they need from key players, they should be in the thick of the division race and try to get into the playoffs. I mean, some playoff experience this year for what is a team getting younger would be fantastic. But I think the key thing is to just to keep building positive momentum game by game as the season goes on. I mean, we saw that last year. They got better as the season went on. And so that's all you can hope for. And then, you know, health is always the X factor, because when you have, you know, a few elite players, I mean, look at the difference when Chase Young wasn't there early in the season to what happened when he got there. You know, if he stays healthy the full season, I mean, he could be in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation. You have an elite player in Chris Olave. If he stays healthy, that's a big piece of the offense and with a go-to guy that you can depend on for a young quarterback. So I would just want to see, after this season is over, we look back and say, this is still a team on the upswing. This is a team that with another good draft, another good offseason, could be among the top contenders in the NFC. Now, if that happens earlier than expected, great. But you have to understand that there's a lot of young guys and, you know, year two of this coaching staff, but I think they're taking positive momentum in. And, you know, we're going to find out very quickly. Those road trips to Detroit and to Baltimore to start the season are a big challenge, you know, and so they've got to come out ready to play from week one.
Stan, obviously unfortunate news with the Saints and wide receiver Jordan Tyson right now. He's dealing with an injury, going to miss at least 2 months right now that we're expecting. But some of these other rookies on this squad in this draft class, has anybody kind of stood out to you that has piqued your interest that you want to see more of coming up?
I like Berrion Brown. I've seen him make some plays. I haven't been there to watch practice, but I keep up and watch, you know, all the video feeds from all the various outlets covering the team and the team itself. And I like a lot of what he's shown. And, you know, but I mean, the Jordan Tyson part of it is important, because, I mean, first of all, I'm glad that it's only going to be a month of the regular season that's going to happen. It happens now instead of, you know, in week one, and he misses a big chunk of the regular season. But it's a priority to get him back healthy and get him on the field, because I think with Chris Olave and Tyson and Devon Vele, and if Berrion Brown and Trey Palmer contribute, you know, you got a mix of different receivers with different skill profiles that can give defenses headaches. So Berrion Brown, I think now with Tyson out, it creates more of an opportunity for him to be in the mix. And I like his speed and his playmaking ability as well. So he's one of the guys, you know, I'll be watching. And then, you know, we haven't talked much about Caden Ellis. I mean, I know he's not a rookie, but he's a newcomer on the defense, stepping into, you know, a position that's going to be really important, because DeMario Davis was always someone you could count on. You didn't have to worry about that position at all. You knew you were going to get elite level production there. And so, you know, Caden Ellis has shown he can be that type of player. And so they're going to need that from him. But, I just want to see the team go out and compete. I want to see these young players adjust to becoming key contributors to the team as they grow, and see the coaching staff continue to develop them. I mean, you know, like I said, the opportunity is there for the playoffs because of the division. And so if you start stacking some wins, you know, you look up, and then, you know, the NFC South, I mean, you could win it with 10 or 11 wins. So, you know, that may be a lot to ask for where the team is right now. But, you know, who knows? You know, maybe it happens sooner than expected.
Stan, I got to ask you. No, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. No, I'm saying it's not like we're in the NFC West where you got the Seahawks and the 49ers, you know, to deal with.
Yeah, and I know just listening to maybe some of the Atlanta personnel and looking at some of what they've shown on television, they're still trying to figure out whether they have the quarterback situation figured out. And so it'll be intriguing from that standpoint. But I just wanted you to tell kind of the listeners some of what you're going on. We know that you have the podcast and the work that you will be doing for the Saints, and just tell some of our listeners where they can find, you know, the work that you do, where they can find that at.
Well, there's something coming down the pike that I can't really discuss right now.
No. But, correct. No, what you can discuss. What you can discuss.
Well, you know, me and my former partner Neil Everett from SportsCenter, we do a podcast. We're going to start that back up once the regular season in NFL starts. We did 42 episodes last season, and we ended after the NBA Finals. And so we're gonna crank that up again once football gets started again. And then, you know, basketball-wise, I've been doing NBA TV and, you know, some things like that. But there's and then, of course, on Saints.com, we're going to be doing a preview podcast each week that that will get fans ready for the game coming up and provide a look at the entire NFL and the division from the Saints' perspective. You know, sort of like a big picture look. I mean, you guys are on the ground there in New Orleans every day, so I'm going to provide more of a big picture perspective about where the team fits into the overall NFL, what's going on in the division, what's going on around the league. So, I'm looking forward to providing that for Saints fans every week on Saints.com.
Definitely appreciate the time, Stan. As always, can check you out. You, like you said, the Stan and Neil Show podcast. I'm sure you can check it out where everyone gets your podcast, right? Spotify and all that.
Yep. And if we talk this time next week, we'll have a lot more to talk about on that front.
No doubt about it. Stan, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us here on WWL Saints Radio as we get ready for game day tomorrow, man.
All right. Let's go, Saints. Who dat?
Thanks, Stan.
Stan Verrett, NewOrleansSaints.com host, along with the Stan and Neil Show, joining us here on WWL Saints Radio. Right now, we'll take a break, come back with more of Sports Talk. Keep it locked right here on WWL, folks. Folks, you need a new garage door, you can win one from WWL. Hurricane season can put every part of your home to the test, including your garage door. WWL and Ace Garage Door are giving you a chance to win the Hurricane Ready Garage Door giveaway with a brand new garage door, an installation that's worth up to $2,500. Enter to win right now at WWL.com/contest for your chance. Get your home ready before the next storm threatens with Ace Garage Door and WWL. Been talking a lot about the black and gold, getting ready for Saints preseason game number 2 tomorrow against the Rams. Joining the conversation now in our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, I'm going to check in with Jimmy and Gretna. I want to talk about Saints football. What you got for us today, Jimmy?
Hey, guys. Hey, real quick, you know, we all know that we've taken some injuries. Obviously, there's never a good time for injuries, but I kind of feel like this is a really good chance for the young guys to get an opportunity. Looking back at the preseason game against the Jags, that kid Jaden Price, kind of stood out. He made some big plays. He might be kind of like the guy who breaks through when the lights are on, that he's going to make the team, maybe as a practice squad guy or something along those lines. Tell me a little bit more about that. I looked into him a little more. He does also do some kicking and punt returning. He did that in college. But, yeah, like just taking it a step further, you know, seeing the wide receiver room now where Polk retired and Tyson's going to be out for a while. Two guys who are, you know, I mean, obviously Tyson's going to make the team or be on the team, but Polk was probably going to be on the active roster. You know, these younger guys like Lance and Palmer really do have a chance to step up. I want to get your take on that. And again, just asking you guys, as far as the QB2 battle is concerned, you know, like, what do y'all see here? Who do you think ultimately will be the QB2 for week one behind Shuck? Will it be Rattler or will it be Wilson?
Thanks for sounding off, Jimmy.
Yeah, Jimmy, for me, Price makes this team. If he continues on doing what he has done up until this point, he's not going to be just practice squad. He'll be one of your 53-man guys that make this team. I mean, and so it's going to be up to him to continue to make plays. And so the other part of it is, you know, I don't know which quarterback steps up. I don't know which one. I don't know if it will be Wilson or Rattler that will ultimately win that job. I think the Saints, if you're being honest, they're actually pleased with both of those guys just from a progression standpoint. You would have figured that Rattler, since he's been in that offense a year longer, would kind of continue to separate, but that has not been the case. You know, that has not been the case. And so you do have a true competition there. And so I don't know if I have the answer to say, oh, yeah, this is who this guy is going to win it, you know, running away or clear. That's what they want to kind of continue to see. And when you talk about Lance and when you talk about Palmer and, you know, you talk about some of those young receivers, Berrion Brown still being one of those guys, you know, for the Saints, Bud Means still being one of those guys. And I can't completely just write off Ronnie Bell, who has been, you know, a part of the active roster, Kevin Austin Jr., who has been a part of the active roster. Those guys, they've been available, you know. They've been available, and so they're going to continue to make plays. They've gotten first-team reps. They've been a part of what you're doing. You want to see if those young guys can overtake them. That's basically where you are with that receivers core. So we will see how the reps continue to unfold, particularly not only in practice but in games. Trey Lance.
Again. Another dollar in the swear jar.
Yep, another dollar in the swear swear jar. But when you talk about Bryce Lance, he didn't play last week against Jacksonville. This will be
– he was suited up, but he was dealing with an injury.
I'm going to knock on wood. Yeah. This will be his first time playing in an NFL game against the Rams. And so he was suited up, but he was dealing with from an injury standpoint. And to be honest – I don't know how much. I figure some of the starters will play. Now, when I say that, not your frontline guys. There's a couple guys that will have a pretty good role that certain packages, they would be considered a starter. But, you know, a guy like Vele may play a series. But I don't see him playing a quarter. And that may even be a stretch.
I'd be surprised if we see Vele. I really would. Just because of where you are in the wide receiver room. One thing I'll point out, you know, the Saints, you don't want – the injuries are obviously a negative. The silver lining, the half glass full take about the wide receiver injuries to Jordan Tyson, whoever else, and Mason Tipton is you have Mason Tipton on PUP. I would expect him to start the season on PUP. You have Jordan Tyson. He's hurt. I would expect him to start the season on injured reserve. So that creates a scenario where you could feasibly – keep 8 wide receivers that can produce throughout the season while only having 6 on the active roster. And that, so like a Kevin Austin, Trey Palmer, you know, these guys down the line that would have, Bub Means, that would have been really having a hard time to crack that nut and make the roster because of the injuries, you have a lot more flexibility.
Well, I think you have some flexibility, but here's what you got to remember as well. Tyson has to make the initial before you can put him on.
No, that changed a few years ago.
Oh, they did change.
Yeah, you can have up to two players that you designate for IR before cutdowns. And it was for the exact reason you're talking about, so you don't have to cut someone and say, hey, hang around.
But can I bring him back after four games?
Yes, you can. You can do it twice. So a couple years ago, they did that with Kendre Miller.
It
saves teams from having to expose guys to waivers.
Correct.
Just to do that.
Well, if that's the case, then yeah, that changes a lot as far as at least for two positions or at least two players.
Right.
Saints fans, you can chime in with us as well. 504-260-1870 is the number on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Right now, we're going to step away for a break. Coming back with more sports talk right after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. You can sound off on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line 504-260-1870. Waiting for Saints preseason game number two tomorrow, a 3 o'clock kickoff against the LA Rams. There is some preseason action this evening. First up, it's the Jets and Steelers. That's going to be on the NFL Network, a 6 o'clock kickoff at 6:30. If you have ESPN Unlimited, I don't know how ESPN keeps getting away with all this stuff, but the streaming stuff, as you know, is ridiculous. The Panthers and Jaguars are on ESPN Unlimited at 6:30, and then at 8 p.m. tonight on the NFL Network, you've got the Packers and the Broncos. Curious, you guys, are you really interested in any other preseason action that isn't Saints football? If it's on TV, when I happen to be around, I'll throw it on and kind of tune in a bit. But even last night's action with Fernando Mendoza, I did not tune into it at all.
I'll watch it if it's on. You know, the final 4 minutes of any game is interesting because the players on the field definitely care. But I do feel like from a national perspective, I'm good. I can I have plenty of football in my life. That's how I feel. But it is engaging. It is important for the players on the field. So I don't want to take anything away from that.
Well, it's
definitely.
I get that it's engaging,
it's
but is it interesting?
Well, it's important. It's their job, but that doesn't mean I have to watch it.
There's a lot of jobs I don't take the time to watch.
Going to take a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back next hour, I'll be breaking down more of the black and gold, plus talk to former Saints Super Bowl champ safety Roman Harper joining us. He's also SEC Network analyst. Get into some Saints and maybe a little LSU Ole Miss talk as well. Interested to hear him chime off about that. Want to let you folks know Magazine Pizza, 1068 Magazine Street, casual American New York style pizzeria, dine-in or delivery. Just check it out. Pizza, salad, wings, all that. MagazinePizza.com. Coming back with more sports talk right after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk here on WWL. We've been talking all about the Saints getting ready to face the Rams tomorrow, preseason game number two, right here on WWL Saints Radio, a 3 p.m. kickoff. Looking at this team in California, they got to go against two joint practices with the Dallas Cowboys and then against the LA Rams before this matchup hits us tomorrow. We talked a lot about the offense, I feel, so far. Just curious, with Jeff Nowak and sideline reporter, also Saints color analyst Deuce McAllister out in California here as well on WWL Radio, looking at the defensive side of the ball, one of the injuries that I think that's most concerning to me for this team right now is Quincy Riley. I mean, not to downplay any of the other injuries that this team has faced so far, but him being sidelined for any amount of time is pretty concerning for me when you look at the rest of the secondary group right now. Not to knock any of these guys, but that duo of Kool-Aid McKinstry and Quincy Riley seem to really be gaining a lot of steam going into week one. There's a lot of excitement about these two young corners developing and working together. And now with Quincy Riley kind of down right now, a little bit of a hit to that unit. I'm just concerned now how that whole secondary is going to look.
Well, even though they were young and you talk about they had some success last year, I still question the corners. And the only reason I question them is because they were young and you needed both of those guys to kind of take the next step if you're going to go from being good to elite. And I think, you know, with Kool-Aid and even with Quincy, you know, you had a guy that was – Hunty Taylor was the number one guy.
Yeah.
Now, for both of those guys, they're moving up the ladder. And so losing Quincy definitely hurts. it hurts that defense because now you're depending on one of your veteran corners to step in and be able to make sure that they, hey, I can man this position. You know, whether you're talking about Emerson Martin or whether you're talking about Yedem. I mean, both of those guys can do it. And the other guy, you know, who we hadn't seen in a while is Wright.
Rajon Wright.
Rajon Wright. And so, you know, he's been dealing with the injury as well. So for me, I'm not to the point completely where I need to bring in another corner, but I'm not very far off either. And what I mean by that is we know that they had Arnold in for a visit, and he agreed to a contract with Seattle as far as the Seahawks are concerned. For me, if those two guys are healthy, you feel good about it. I don't know if you feel great because it will be a different situation for both of them. They played, you know, in the nickel together as far as on the outside, but that wasn't the case for the base. And it'll be totally different being the man and being the other guy or the number two guy, which will be the case for Riley. So I feel good about it. I don't feel great. And I think the more reps they get, you will feel a little bit better about it. And then you got to show up. And that's just being honest. You got to show up as far as on the field.
Yeah, and it's tough to know how much time Quincy's going to miss. He did look like he was in a decent bit of pain when he went off the field on Tuesday. I will say I feel better about it in terms of if Martin hadn't really picked up things over the last week and a half, 2 weeks, I would be very, very concerned because he had a rough start to camp. There's no way around it. I think he was getting his legs under him a little bit. He's just been a lot more competitive. He stayed more attached in coverage over the last few practices. And I think I didn't watch the defense, but you said he was the one who got the first kind of reps with the first team yesterday.
Yes.
With the Rams. Yeah, and so that's a change because earlier in camp when they were rotating guys and Quincy Riley swapped to the second team, it was Ike Yadam who took over with the first team. So I think that does tell you that run of improved play hasn't gone unnoticed. But I think there's two positions that I look at on the Saints roster, and we're going to get down to cuts, and I think they should be aggressive looking at some depth pieces. One is offensive guard. I think you really need to be scouring the free agent market for a guy that can, A, be a depth piece and or a backup center option. And then outside corner, because I just – If Quincy does miss a significant amount of time and your options are Martin Emerson and Ike Yadam, I'd really like to have another body behind him because I just don't know if you have another viable outside corner option.
No, I agree with you, and I think, you know, that's how it felt. We both think – I know that they will, you know, depending on how bad Rajon Wright is –
He's been out a lot of time.
Yeah, he's been out a while, but I mean, he could possibly be an option for you. Whoever that guy is, you know, he's going to have to play some special teams and, you know, just be a guy that can come in, fill in, and give you some snaps. But there is some concern. I mean, you feel good if they're healthy, but there is concern there that you don't have enough. And then definitely from the guard standpoint, I am looking, you know, and we saw the trade last year for the backup center. I don't think that you need to go that far at this point, but I would not be one bit surprised. I mean, I like Sherman. I like Sherman as a guard for you.
He can play all five spots.
Well, he can play all five.
That's a feather in his cap.
He can play all five, but I'm probably looking for a veteran, guy that has, you know, 20-30 starts under his belt.
So I have a question for you. So, you know, season starts tomorrow. Would you feel comfortable going into the regular season with Torricelli Simpkins III as your only real backup center with, I guess, Cesar Ruiz being that emergency guy? Would you feel comfortable with that, or would you feel like, hey, I need to go figure something out?
No, I'm comfortable with that.
You are? Okay.
Yeah, it's short-term. It's not long-term. If I have to finish out a game, that's what I'm doing.
Cesar or Sully?
No, I'm going with Cesar.
Yeah.
If I have to finish out a game, I'm going with Cesar. Now, if I have to start multiple games, I'm going with Torricelli.
Okay.
But
so, like, I guess theoretically in that scenario, you could have Torricelli inactive for games and then only need him when you have to start a game with a different center.
Theoretically.
Yeah.
Theoretically. But that's probably even hard for me there.
So
that's probably even hard for me there just because – I would hate to disrupt two positions where I could disrupt only one position.
If you would move Caesar for temporary reasons to center, are you going to – you're sliding Will Sherman into that right guard spot, or would you go with the rookie and Jeremiah Wright?
No, you're going with Jeremiah Wright.
You have to.
Yeah, you're going with Jeremiah Wright.
You've seen definitely – not definitely, but you've seen at least enough from him so far. I know, like, there's still a lot to prove for the rookie right now, but a guy that at least has looked like he's belonged in training camp so far.
I don't know if you've seen enough, but I think that that's the direction that you're going eventually anyway. I mean, if that's the direction I'm going eventually, that's where I'm going to go. I mean, I've got to get him ready to play. He and Simpkins, Torricelli, as well as I'm just looking at from a number, those three guys, it's three of them. Will Sherman, Simpkins, Wright.
Kilty?
When they come in. No. Wright, Sherman, Simpkins, when they come in, you have an aggressive group. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing that they've got to do is understand how to use my aggressive understand how to use my aggressive blocking style. I mean, because there's times where there was times against the Rams. I don't know if it was a hole because the officials were out there, but I don't want to just throw the guy to the ground just because I have him off balance. I don't want to because then all I'm doing, particularly in the open field, I'm opening up myself for a holding call. You're not even at the focal point of the play, but I understand wanting to finish a guy off. And I think all three of them play like that. And sometimes that gets them in trouble. That gets them in trouble where it's a stunt and you go and you're trying to chase a guy and the guy that you need to be blocking, he's coming back around or he's so tight to you where you don't even see him. And so, like, different things of that nature, I don't want to take your aggression away from you as far as a blocker, but I don't want you to get silly penalties as well because you are so aggressive and I want to finish a guy to the ground.
We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk, get more into another Saint joining us on WWL Radio. Roman Harper, Saints Super Bowl champ, also does some analyst work for the SEC Network. We'll chime in on his thoughts on the black and gold. You can chime in as well, too, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. Step it away. Be right back. Keep it locked on WWL. Rolling on here on Sports Talk. Welcome back in, Steve Geller, along with Charlie Long, Deuce McAllister, Jeff Nowak, and happy to welcome in Saints Super Bowl champ, Saints team Hall of Famer, and SEC Network analyst Roman Harper now to the radio huddle. Always great to hear from you, Roman. How you been doing?
I'm doing well, man. Just getting home. I hosted the Feinbaum show today. It was great. A lot of people from New Orleans called in, from Alabama. It came from all over, so I had a pretty good day, and now I got to go run and pick up some kids here in a little bit.
Nice. How's it been? You know, I know media land has been kind to you. What do you think about being now a host on a show?
Oh, man, I enjoy it. I mean, Feinbaum's a very unique situation where, you know, not everybody has call in, so it's not like I'm just up there talking by myself. It was very entertaining, and they never seemed to amaze me.
Harp.
What's up, Deuce?
How you doing, man?
I'm living, dog. How you doing, bro?
You doing more than living, man. Are you in? You said you just hosted the show. Are you in Charlotte? Did you go to the Charlotte studio and host it?
Yes, I did. I was here in Charlotte hosting the show, and now I'm just getting back home. I got to go pick up my kids from a football game. It's the first season, well, first game of the football season at their school. So everybody all excited and they're wearing all their school spirits. You know the stuff. You know the drill. You know the drill.
Yeah, but wait, I do know the drill. Are they cheering? Are they in they're involved?
No, knock on wood, none of my kids are cheerleading. I'm missing that part. So I'm totally fine with that. My baby boy, my boys are too young to play football. So they're not on the big leagues yet.
Yeah, I knew they weren't old enough for that, but I'm just saying those babies better not be out there cheering, and you at the house on the radio, you working, but you ain't really working. You supposed to be at that game with them kids. That's where I'm going, Because
No cheerleaders. We don't have any cheerleaders. We just show up. My daughters are not about it, and my boys, they probably don't want to cheer. They probably want to play.
I know your boys want to play, but I don't believe that about the girls. But anyway, I don't want to talk about that no more. I don't want to talk about that no more. Harp. So, are you ready to petition to go back and play at Alabama, to go get you a little NIL? We're gonna file us a TRO, and yeah. I might even my old self,
like a favorable judge.
I might my old self put myself in the transfer portal as well and shop myself a little bit to see what it looked like. I mean, because we're not too old.
Ole Miss got Kewon Lacy. They don't need you. So you're right. I was talking to my son.
Wait. You stop right there. You stop right there. I'm still good for 2 yards. I might not be good for 35, but I'm still good for 2 yards. Now you can talk about you and your son and the YouTube video that he probably watching, and he said, "Ooh, Daddy, I can't even see you out there because the film so bad."
It's grainy.
It's grain. It's grain.
All those are true. He literally told me 2 days ago, "Dad, you need to go back. You need to go back." He wants me to go all the way back to the NFL. He had my wife actually call my football agent, Bill Johnson, and like, "Hey, see if there's any teams. Dad can go back now." I'm like, "Dude, I'm not going anywhere." But it is so interesting how now, you know, because the federal law passed today that put a stay on for the Colorado ruling. I just went through a whole big thing with this on the Feinbaum show about the Colorado ruling. So it's 1,000 or so players out there that are now ineligible from the Colorado ruling, which allowed them to be eligible this season. Now, the state ruling, like states like Louisiana, where now Louisiana, the Pyburn kid, Daquan Wright, the tight end that was at Ole Miss last year, it's a couple still a group out there that can go through NFL camps, not make the team, and then go back to college. And so it's kind of the wild, wild west. And so as long as you have the money to start a case and get bundled in with other guys at the state level, you got a chance right now to go back and play college football, including me and you, Deuce. So I know one of us got the money, and I think it's you that could at least put up the lawyer and make some court costs to make it up, because that's what this is all about now. If I can get things tied up in court, I can go play. At least for a whole year. That's how Diego Pavia got back. That's how your quarterback Trinidad Chandler's got to come back. It's not like they're winning the case. They're just trying to tie it up in case long enough to go play.
Well, here's the other thing as well. We'll get a lawyer to take it on pro bono. But see, I can work that angle. But we gonna need your knees and your body if we talking about going out and playing, because mine just is not in the shape to go out and get hit. Or I don't think yours is in shape to go out and hit a lot of people. But I guess here's how I understand it. The federal ruling stopped a lot of the four-year guys that were attempting to go after the fifth year. Now, as you stated, you can still go and file a case. And I know it's weird because a lot of the seasons, I think week zero starts, what, next week? Week zero starts like a week or two.
North Carolina and TCU play in Ireland on next Saturday. Yes.
Yeah. And so you have week zero that is literally starting in a week. And you have some of the state cases, you're correct, some of the state cases, and it's just not the one in Louisiana, some of those state cases where they can get the injunction and those young men and women, they can go and play. We know about the football and the basketball, but there are now some baseball players, some spring sports that were possibly affected by this ruling, particularly on the federal side. And I know a lot of the fuss as well. Here's where it hurts. You've got individuals that will be able to walk on this late in the game. The young man or young woman, you know, particularly football, we'll focus. The young man that's going to get affected is the walk-on kid. It's not the scholarship player. They will meet the numbers. you'll get the 105, 103, whatever that number is as far as total players, but it'll be the player that has been the walk-on, that has been invited, that's going to get bumped off. And then they will be creative from a schooling standpoint where, hey, you just have to be enrolled X amount of hours, whether that's 9, whether that's 12. I know there's a report out there about Sellers who – And what some people didn't understand about the Sellers piece, he's working at a golf course. How about this, Rome? He's working at a golf course. He is on track. No, this is true now. He is on track to graduate. He is on track to graduate in December, but his job is to work at a golf course, and that counts towards his 9 hours of school because it is basically like his intern for his degree. And so some people got mad about that he is not physically taking any more classes. He is done with that. His job is to go to the golf course 3 times a week, whatever it may be, and work at the golf course. Give me your thoughts.
My first thought is I wish I was playing college football right now. That's my first thought. My second thought is, dude, any rule that you think is like a rule can all be upside down in 24 hours. You know, all these – like, a lot has happened in the last 72 hours in college sports that you would think, like, pigs are falling from the sky, Deuce. And so it's been crazy to kind of see, kind of step back. The fact that we have opinions about something that literally could change overnight has been so interesting and intriguing for all of us. And that everything about the college space that we love is kind of getting flipped upside down on its head right now. And so – you're not going to be able to put the milk back in the carton anymore. Everything's out in the open. It's going to be super interesting to me to see what they do with these teams. Like you said, like the first player that actually does come back from a professional stage to now go play college, because you really can't blame the college coaches saying they're cheating, because ultimately the NCAA can't defend their own rules. And so they are in the business of winning. And so anything that's going to help me win games, I'm going to try and do that. And you can't tell me that bringing back a veteran guy, we saw from Indiana, who had a lot of guys that were 22, 23, sometimes 24 years old last year, win a championship because they were older team. And right now I saw it in Omaha this past year, was that older teams are what's winning right now in baseball, in sports overall. Because, you know, I talked to a guy today. He said, imagine this, you know, Will Anderson, the defensive end for the Houston Texans now, played at Alabama, all right? He was in college for 3 years. He left when he was 20 or 21 years old. And now, all of a sudden, you let him go develop an NFL body for a year or so and then come back to college. It's not even a fair fight. And it wasn't that fair when he left. But this is what we're talking about. Guys are going off, becoming professionals in some sort of form of whether it's coaching, body type, like learning how to be a pro, and then all of a sudden going back to college. They should wreck the game. Not only that, but then improve their draft status. I'm just totally confused, because what if that team that you come back to doesn't have the roster spot? Is that person now allowed to go become a free agent and get in the transfer portal as well? There's just so many different layers to this that we just do not know. And honestly, none of us have the idea, or none of us have the answers to any of these questions, because it's different questions arising every single day.
Well, my question to you, though, is the team that you were technically with last, they're the ones that has to put you in the transfer portal. You can't just declare yourself a transfer portal kid. Somebody has to put you in the transfer portal. And so it's technically supposed to be the last team that you were just with. But, you know, hey, I regress. I don't know. I do have one more question for you, Hop. And then we got to let these other
go
folks
ahead,
talk. It just can't be me and you. But I do.
I get it.
The SEC has a rule. The SEC has a rule where if you do not
on your research, Deuce.
Hop. Wrong. I'm leave me alone. Let me go ahead with my question. The SEC has a rule that you must transfer. Unless, you know, there's a firing. We do know that. You got 30 days. If there's a firing of your head coach, yada, yada, you can transfer. But there's a window that you must transfer. And if you do not, you can't transfer in conference. I know a lot of people are saying, well, the state ruling says this. The NCAA ruling says this. Here's the problem. This is a conference rule. This is nothing to do with state and or NCAA. This is run by what's your boss name? What's your commissioner name? What's the name?
Greg Sankey.
Thank you. This is run by Greg Sankey and the 16, whatever it is, presidents. You know, I don't even think all of them have the stroke that they think they have, but that's a different conversation. You know what I'm saying? That's a different conversation. Do you think he lets kind of, all right, you're in the transfer portal now. You just won that case, but I am not going to allow you to transfer in conference. Do you think he backs away from that?
No way they back away from that. That's literally the only thing they got left standing to fight off anything. And so I think they're trying to stay strong where they are strong at, which is a rule within the SEC. And that transfer portal, like you said, the spring portal is already closed. And so if you come back and the team does not allow you to come back to that team because they got roster spot or they're not going to let go of the 105th guy on their roster who's a walk-on possibly, that what do you do after that? Like I said, Deuce, these are problems that nobody even thought about a week ago. So all this has to be – but Greg Sankey did send out a memo just talking about this past week that, hey, just reminding everybody that you can't transfer within the SEC, within the conference, after the portal's closed. Just in case these win – he probably heard of the windfalls that were coming. And so he put that out there for a reason. I think messaging is important. I also think the NCAA failed everybody by not including this 2022 class. They left that whole class out. They specifically picked 2023 and blah, blah, blah. And so with the five for five. And so the fact that you left that team, that class out, did they do that on purpose to create this chaos and mayhem to now all of a sudden want the electorals in the Senate and Congress to all of a sudden be and say, hey, look, I told you we need this problem solved and you guys will help us out. So are they doing that on purpose because they knew all this was going to happen? I can't answer that. But at the end of the day, it is mayhem. It's chaos. And I don't think it's anywhere close to being done, because if you do come back and you're not able to transfer and you say that the team won't let you, then that's just another case. And so we'll have to get that pro bono call in again, because I don't think once I come back, Alabama's going to let me play. So I'm going to have to hit the portal too, Deuce.
We got some issues there. All right, like we said, we got to let these young other fine gentlemen, you know, have in on the conversation, Rome, and then I'll let you go get the kids.
You going to yield your time?
I'm yielding my time.
All right. Well, Rome, good to chat with you. I do got to ask you a couple questions about the Saints, right?
Say it again.
I said, I do got to ask you a couple questions about the Saints, right? You know, like we got to get that part of the program in. And so, you know, one guy I was talking to yesterday was Isaiah Stallbird. And, you know, it got me thinking, like, the linebacker position in today's NFL is so much different than, you know, when you played. And, you know, he's 6'1", 205, but he's playing linebacker. He came up as a safety, but in the NFL, he's playing linebacker. And one of the things he told me yesterday was, like, his issue is not making weight. His issue was keeping his weight up. He's constantly got to go and get extra shakes after practice. And, you know, what I've been struck by with Brandon Staley's defense for this team is his ability to find roles for guys up and down the roster. And Isaiah is an interesting case because, you know, he was out on like third downs last year and he had this really kind of unique third and long role where he was out there like leapfrogging Kirk Cousins on pass rushing attempts. I'm just curious, like what have you seen from Brandon Staley's defense when you've watched this team that you like, and what is his ability to kind of create roles for guys up and down the roster, and how does that help a team as it navigates a season?
Well, living in Charlotte, I hadn't got to actually watch New Orleans a ton preseason so far, besides highlights and things of that nature. So you only get to see the highs, not the lows. But overall, I've almost got hit by a bug outside my house. Overall, I've seen Coach Staley's defense throughout the years, being with the Chargers, being other places. And so 3-4 gives you a little bit of flexibility as far as positional changes and things of that nature on the first couple downs. But obviously, when it comes to third down, you're going to be a nickel set. So you're going to have more four down. And you want to have that quote-unquote dime linebacker that's able to cover linebackers, I mean cover tight ends and running backs out of the backfield on third down, but then also able to play more in space and then not really lose a lot in the run game when teams are trying to run the ball on you when you try and get small. And so I've done that. I did it 1 year with Rob Ryan pretty well to success in 2013. Me and Curtis Lofton were actually right there. So, and having a guy that can communicate and understands coverage and some other different things allows you more flexibility because you gain speed, you lose nothing in the coverage aspects of it, and then you're not really losing anything on the rundowns because you don't think they're going to run. As long as I can fit a run and just hammer it back to the other guy, you can make some things happen defensively. I also would say that the last 4 years of football in the NFL specifically, I think it's going more to positionless football. A lot like what they do in basketball, where now everybody's able to shoot and knock down three-pointers. In defenses nowadays, everybody's got to be able to run and cover. It's not the 245-pound linebacker that you used to have that, you know, we only needed them to stop the run and things of that nature. Now everybody has to be able to play in space because offenses are designing plays to attack matchups in space. And so if you can't defend those matchups or space, you really can't play. So if you have a jersey or if you're going to make a roster, I could totally see every week you have a defense or a couple calls up that week that's going to allow you to play everybody. There's no reason to give guys jerseys on game day when there's only – how many guys are up? It's 53-man roster, only like 48 are up in the game. If I'm giving a jersey to a guy, I want him to be able to play for me. And I think that's got to be the mindset that also keeps guys encouraged on the bench and ready to go during the game as well, that, hey, my time or my number may be called, so I'm locked in a little bit more. I'm not just focused on special teams and then checking out on the defensive meeting. It keeps them all encouraged that they all have a chance to play.
Speaking of time, Roman, definitely appreciate you giving us some on this Friday. Good luck getting the kids, and look forward to talking to you soon again.
Thanks, man. Anytime Deuce calls, you know I'll answer. So, Steve, you're cool too, bro, but no, Deuce is my guy. It's all good. Y'all have a good one, man.
Man, I get it, Roman. Thank you. Deuce McAllister, Jeff Nowak out in California. We just heard from Roman Harper, Saints Super Bowl champ there on WWL. Taking a break, coming back with more of our Saints discussion right after this on WWL. Big old shout out to Magazine Pizza for feeding our Saints game day crew. Magazine Pizza, 1068 Magazine Street. It's a casual American New York style pizzeria. Dine in or get it delivered. It's got some of the best gourmet pizza in town, folks. Magazine Pizza also has pasta, sandwiches, wings, and salads for you. Just visit magazinepizza.com. We're going to take a break, coming back, wrap up sports talk right after this on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk as we close things out. Saints preseason action tomorrow, kicking off 3 p.m. on WWL Saints Radio against the L.A. Rams. Going to talk about now in our final comments some things we're looking forward to seeing in this game. Obviously, the answer is no injuries for the black and gold. But guys, for me, one of the things that I want to see is this running back room. We're going to see Kendra Miller, Devin Neal back in action from injury, so it'll be good to see them in the mix. Obviously, Audric Estime had a nice showing against the Jaguars. He's kind of nicked up right now. Don't think he's going to end up playing. And then Ty Chandler as well, seeing how much he can contribute to this running back group as well, not just on special teams, because obviously with Kamara down right now for a bit and then with the question mark still with Estime, I still don't know exactly how this depth chart is shaking out for the Saints.
Well, for me, in a depth chart standpoint, I think that will all shake out. You know, I think that the depth chart will shake out, and it's going to be, you know, it is what it is from that standpoint. I guess where I'm at is, are you to the point and can you afford to carry three backs or four backs? That's really where I'm at. You know, will it be three backs? Will it be four backs? And you're in a similar situation at receiver.
Yeah.
Will you carry the seven or eight receivers, you know, with maybe one or two of them being PUP and one going on injured reserve? That opens up the door. But if that's the case, because here's what just happened this week. Ridgeway gets banged up. Now Ridgeway is hurt. Now your defensive line, we don't know how long Miller is out. You've already lost Brian Brzee. You just got Galshaw back. You know, and so what do I really do there? You know, because now I don't want to call Boyd a lock, but now Boyd becomes almost a guaranteed lock for you. And now I'm only going to maybe keep three guys, four guys for defensive interior as far as D-tackle are concerned. So there are some question marks for me, and a lot of it will depend on how some of those guys go out and perform in those games. But from a depth standpoint or player standpoint, it becomes, all right, am I keeping an extra receiver? Am I keeping an extra running back where originally I was probably only keep three? Now it's going to be four. And then from a defensive tackle position, because Ridgeway, he had a sleeve on that leg that he ended up hurting already. And so, you know, I assume that he's probably going to be out for sure in this upcoming game. And, you know, probably going to be tough for him to play next week. We'll kind of wait and see. But that's just kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, and it's also a lot easier to sit here right now and say, hey, they're going to keep four running backs. They're going to keep six wide receivers. But, like, think about last year. Like, we all had our roster projections, and then they went out and traded for Austin Richards, traded for Luke Fortner, there was one other that I'm they wavered for Xavier Trust, but then even Devon Vele was a late addition. So that's four players on the 53 that we weren't even accounting for the last week. So I think that's really what I'm looking at in these games is do the offensive linemen, the depth offensive linemen play well enough that you feel like, we don't need to go get a guy? Interior defensive line, do you need to go trade for a guy, or can you let it ride? Like, that's, to me, what you learn in these games. And I still think if you're the Saints, you got to be aggressive to bring in some pieces with some of these depth positions.
Well, and here's the other part of it. I know we're about to get out of here. Here's the other part. We can only talk about what's in the building.
Well, right.
Yeah,
right.
We can only talk about what's in the building. What they're thinking outside of the building and what those other 31 teams are doing, hey, we will just have to wait and see.
Gentlemen, thank you for the time out there, Wes. Anybody going to the Pittsburgh-LA Dodgers game tonight or nah?
No.
Negative,
that's a hike. Nope, we're sticking around. We're sticking around to home base tonight.
Got you. Appreciate the time. Thank you so much. Look forward to hearing from both of you tomorrow. I'm Steve Geller for Deuce McAllister, Jeff Nowak, and Charlie Long. Have a great evening, folks, and look forward to hearing from you back tomorrow's show. First Take with me and Charlie Long starting up 11 a.m. before the Saints kick off 3 p.m. on WWL Saints Radio against the Rams. Who dat? Have a great night.